It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, pilot biometric voter registration ends. How smooth was it? Are there lessons from the main event? PNC faces another crisis. What is it this time? How is the flag bearer responding to this? And is the MP's common fund under threat? Who comes to its rescue? Our text line is 0264-418767. 0264-418767. Send in your comments on the topics we'll be discussing. And Behind the News is also live on all our regional FM stations across the country. After suffering many legal battles before its Congress, the expectation of well-wishers of the PNC was that they would quickly settle down to heal their wounds and unite for the task ahead. But there are reports that one national chairman, Ahmed Ramadan, and the general secretary, Bernard Mona, are not helping matters. We find out from the flag bearer of the PNC, Hassan Ayarga, what he knows about the disagreements between the national offices. Good evening and many thanks for joining us.
Good evening to you.
Are you worried that this should be happening in the party when you are expected to be forging ahead in unity?
I think that this was just a misunderstanding between the two leaders, the general secretary and the chairman of the party. The chairman called for a press conference, created I think a week ago, and wanted to address issues. But in the process, he called the leaders a day after to tell them that they should meet at the party office to have a press conference. And some of them were not happy because they were not part of the decision-making to have that press conference. So the general secretary decided to make another press conference to counter his press conference. But I always say that two wrong doesn't make a right. And for that matter, if the general secretary was not happy with the decision of the chairman, as a young general secretary man coming up, he should have accorded the chairman the due respect and say, look, even though I was not happy with your press conference, but that is not a way to come out and make a counter press conference. And I was disappointed to see my leader, that is the former flag bearer, part of this conference, and that is where I think that there should be a leadership meeting on Saturday, which I am calling, to address such issues so that it never happens again.
In the first place, why were they not invited in the first conference?
No, they were invited, but they were invited a day before the press conference. And he, the general secretary and his group, thought that it was necessary to have that decision before inviting them. But you see, like I said, two wrong doesn't make a right. If your leader goes wrong, doesn't mean that you should also go ahead and make some press conference to counter his reaction. That will say that you are also trying to become one step ahead of your leader. And I believe that these are issues we should not be looking now, because the PNC is at peace with its own members. I am at peace with everybody, with the leader, with the chairman, with the general secretary. And I believe that what I'm looking for is unity for the party. And that is what I'm going to pursue. And in pursuing that, I will need everybody on board, whether the general secretary is happy with my victory or not, or whether the chairman is happy with my victory or not. All I need is the people of the PNC to come and rally behind us so that we can move forward. And that is what I'm going to do on Saturday to make sure that this house is very clean. But I'm glad it has come out very early, so that at least it will give me time to study the situation in my party.
So apart from calling a meeting on Saturday, what other steps are you taking to resolve the impasse?
It's not a problem of the past, it's a problem of the present. And we have resolved the matter even though the press conference came out. But you see, sometimes you need the past to be able to address the future. And that is what I'm going to use. I'm going to use the past to address the future. And that's why I'm saying that even though it has happened, but that is one of the steps I'm going to use to address the future, so that in the future, people don't just come out to make press conferences anyhow and to counter other press conferences. And if there are issues concerning the party, the best place to do, the best place to resort to is the party head office and find solutions to that. If not, we continue that way, then we'll be having more people like Atobaga in the party, and that is what we want to stop. We don't want a situation where people will come out and say, look, you did that and you did. In party politics, it is to agree and to disagree. And in agreeing to disagree, you must learn to respect the rules and the norms of the party. And in respecting the rules and the norms of the party, one must be straightforward and precise.
Just hold the line, and let's go to pollster Ben Essin, who has also just joined us on the line. Thanks for your time. Mr. Essin, so what do you make of the current happenings in the PNC and CPP?
Well, I think that for the PNC, my young brother Ayaraga will have to get some hair dye because he's going to get gray hair ahead of time. It shows up one thing that he has come to inherit, that there had been deep mistrust among the executives, you know, and in the past they had patched on it. But like he said, it has come up, and I hope that the Saturday's meeting will set the ground rules, because when these things play out in public, these are, even if they are not true, these are perceptions of a fragile party. And I believe that the national executives should sit down. Anybody who crosses the line, the ship must be cracked. I don't think that any individual is bigger than the party Dr. Lehman founded. With regards to the CPP, I believe that Ms. Nkrumah was already suspended. And on Saturday, he was seen at the platform of the PPP in PPP shirt and cap. So she resigning yesterday to join the PPP today, for some of us, is no news at all. I believe that when these things happen, the individuals must be sanctioned and the party must move on.
So looking at the happenings in the two Nkrumah's parties, do you foresee the merger between the two?
It can only have a headway if the parties themselves are united. If even there cannot be any merger as at now, if the two parties are even going their separate ways, it's important that there must be some semblance of harmony. When there is harmony, even a month before the Electoral Commission closes the deadline for submission of filing of candidates, there can be a sort of merger. Merger in the sense that, for example, I know that in certain constituencies in the northern part especially, and places in Brong-Ahafo, you've got on their own initiative, executives of the CPP and the PNC having a joint committee, having a joint bank account in which the two secretaries, one is PNC, one is CPP. When that happens, and even there's not a formal merger, you have a situation where among themselves, looking at the numbers, you will know the strength of PNC and CPP, and one will step down for the other. And at the national level, there could be some cohesion. But first, without a strong party internally, there's nothing that one can do to actually actualize any form of harmony. And that's what they must work towards.
Mr. Essin, why is it that smaller minority parties seem to be bogged down with in-house fighting?
Do you want me to be very honest with you?
Yes.
I think the two big parties, they are playing major parts in knocking heads together, because the weaker they are, it's to their advantage. And I smell a rat, but there are certain elements within the two big parties, NDC and MPP, are part of knocking heads. And that's my honest and truthful belief.
Then how can we overcome these squabbles?
I think that they must start within themselves. You see, if my mother was alive and they had told me that, Ben, you have to cut your mother's limb, one limb, to save your mother, I would do it. This is what the PNC and the CPP should do. If any individuals want to bring down the party, they must cut the hip, expel the person, and move on.
And let's go back to Mr. Ayaraga. So, what message do you have for your people?
My message is loud and clear. All I want the people to understand that in as much as we want to move forward, all we need to do is to be more united. Like my brother Leon said, it's unity that will make the party strong. United you stand, divided you fall. But the issue is that the PNC needs the people to be more disciplined in their affairs of running the party. We need a disciplined party, and not party whereby people think that, look, I can do this and I can do that and do that. And that is what I'm saying. I do not stand for any faction, whether the faction of Dr. Mahama or Dr. Ramadan or Mona. No, I stand for the PNC. And what I want is unity. Without unity, I don't think I can move forward. And all I need now is peace to be able to run the structures well and make sure that we move forward. That's what I intend doing.
Can you assure us that within the next week or more, there will be peace in your party?
Under my leadership, I'm telling you and I'm assuring you that by Saturday and Monday coming, we will have a peaceful party and a very, very respected one, of course, and attractive one as well.
All right. Many thanks for joining us. That was the flag bearer of the PNC, Hassan Ayarga. Mr. Essen, so in your view, what do you think may account for the crisis in the PNC? Hello, Mr. Essen. It appears we've lost Mr. Essen on the line. This is Behind the News. The George Walker Bush Highway this evening registered another accident which involved an articulated truck and a Benz splinter bars on the Kwashiman Abeka stretch of the highway. Eric Buedu is an eyewitness. Thanks for your time. So, Eric, what exactly happened?
Thank you. There was a splinter coming from this place, and there was this.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah, hello.
Can you speak up? I can hardly hear you.
Oh, okay. There was an accelerator, the big one with a container on it, coming from Kwashiman Road at the main La Paz Junction. And when it hit the main traffic light, the traffic lights were off. There was this accelerator coming from the new Midway Junction, just adjacent to the new boy town, in front of Echo Bank. Can you get me?
Yes, go ahead.
In front of Echo Bank. So immediately the truck got there, the truck couldn't stop because all the lights were off and the truck was the truck. So the truck, the big truck hit the sprinter and two cars that were parked alongside the road. It was 160 and 127 bars, and urban bars. And the urban bus was filled with passengers. So as I'm talking to you, the fire service and the police are here to come to the bus. The two cars, the container is still on the two cars, and all the people in the cars are dead as I'm talking to you right now.
So what are the police doing as of now?
They have their own cars around, and they are forcing to pull the container from the big truck.
All right. Thanks for joining us. That was an eyewitness, Eric Buedu, who reported that there is an accident at the George Walker Bush Highway. This is Behind the News. To identify potential challenges that will emerge with the introduction of the biometric voter registration, the Electoral Commission has initiated a pilot program in some districts across the country. The major biometric registration itself is slated for the 24th of March to Faith Bay. The pilot biometric voter registration, which started last Saturday, ended today. How did the pilot program go? Behind the News finds out more from the EC, the political parties, and some electorate who took part in the pilot program. Henrietta Hoto registered at the Nima Singh Kizito Primary School in the Ayawaso East constituency in Accra. Thanks for joining us, Henrietta.
You're welcome.
How would you describe the pilot voter registration?
It's okay. It's modernized. But the only problem we have is it's very slow.
So, can you tell us the number of minutes it took for you to get registered?
It took me about more than 4 hours because I went there at 9 a.m. and I came around 3:30.
Was there a long queue? That's why it took you so long.
Yeah, there was a queue. There was a queue. But those behind the computer also, it seems like you have to get more than one. It was very slow.
But the process itself, when you it was your turn, how minutes did it take for you to get registered?
I didn't take any much time, so okay. It was okay.
And how was the attitude of the officials during the registration?
Oh, they were cool. They were okay.
They were okay?
Yeah, they were very funny. Everything was good there, but just the time.
Did you encounter any problem?
Yes. The only problem we encountered is there was a little misunderstanding.
And what was the misunderstanding?
The aged have to come before the young ones or the healthy ones. So when we went for the beginning, they didn't tell us that. It was later on before they started doing that process.
So they allowed the aged to register before the young ones. That was the only problem you encountered.
Yes.
Now, what recommendations would you make for the Electoral Commission as we will make the major registration in March?
Okay, the recommendation I will make is that they should get some more people than those participating to be more, a little bit more. Because the process is a little bit slow because of the queue, the number of people around.
All right, thanks for your time. That was Henrietta Hoto.
Yes, thank you very much.
Joining us also on the line is Charles Osei Kwame, who is the Ayawaso District Registration Supervisor. Thanks for your time. How did the 4-day process fare at the NEMA Center? Hello, Mr. Kwame Osei.
Hello.
How did the 4-day process fare at NEMA?
NEMA.
Can you tell us how the process fared?
Please, I can't hear you, but a little bit louder.
Hello, Mr. Osei, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
So how did the 4-day process fare at the NEMA Center?
Oh, fine. Well, mostly, we started on the 25th of February, which was Saturday. And we were able to register about 20 people for the first day. And then, second day, which was Sunday, we had a little problem with our machine. And so, we work on it, and as we have to change it. And from there, it started working smoothly. And that day, we were able to register 94 people. So on the third day, which was yesterday, we were able to register about 150 people. And today, being the last day, we registered 158 people. Hello?
Would you say turnout was slow? Hello, Mr. Osei Kwame.
Yeah, madam.
How was voter turnout?
I can't get you well.
How was voter turnout, the people who were registering?
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Kwame. All right, it appears we are having challenges with our line.
It is very difficult in hearing you.
All right, it appears we are having challenges with our line. We'll call back Mr. Osei again. This is Behind the News, and these are some of your text messages. Alight Ibrahim UCC says, the EC must intensify their public education on the upcoming biometric registration, even the pilot program was not widely publicized. Now we have the Propaganda Secretary of the NDC, Richard Kweshiga, on the line. Thanks for your time. So, what does the NDC make of the pilot project?
The Electoral Commission has indicated that the pilot project that it carried out was very successful, and we in the NDC are excited about that news. Our only prayer is that at the end of the day, when the exercise itself takes off, the expectation will be that there will be very minimal hitches, even if there should be any at all. And we're very confident that the exercise will be successful. And judging from the pilot, which by all standards is an encouraging news, we think that all things being equal, the registration exercise should be a major success.
Were there any problems or challenges that came to your attention?
Well, as I said, that the Electoral Commission that actually carried out the pilot has come out publicly to tell us that it was, a large success. And if the EC talks about it being a large success, then we can rest assured. But all the same, we also need to continue to hope and pray that when the exercise itself takes off, it will be without hitches. Of course, there will also be the need for the intensification of public education and awareness, and again also for the wider Ghanaian populace to know the nitty-gritties of the registration exercise, the do's and the don'ts, and so that we will all be very much impressed and ready for it.
Recently, we've been experiencing power outages. Do you foresee that as a major challenge to the forthcoming registration?
Yeah, clearly, I think that the Electoral Commission must have in place a plan B, but also we have been assured by the Electricity Company of Ghana, or those that manage the power in this country, that they will do all they can to hold themselves in readiness to ensure that the frequent blackouts, do not disrupt the whole exercise. And so, the expectation is that equal, it will be okay. I think that every well-meaning Ghanaian will be praying and hoping that it will be a very successful exercise. If anybody wants to be a doomsday prophet, as far as this whole exercise is concerned, will only demonstrate how patriotic such an individual will be. Besides, we are very confident that a strategic plan is in place. A plan B is in place to forestall any major hitch. So that is it.
All right. Thanks for your time. That was Richard Kwashiga, who is the propaganda secretary of the NDC. Henry Korte, the NPP parliamentary candidate for Ayawaso Central, was the party's agent for the Nima St. Kizito Primary School pilot voter registration center, but his line is not going through. Joining us also on the line is Sylvia No, who is the principal public relations officer of the Electoral Commission. Good evening, Sylvia. And the pilot biometric voter registration ended today. How was it?
Good evening. Let me say that today was the last day for the pilot registration exercise. Now, there were monitors on the field, monitors to ascertain or find out the challenges involved that emanated from the exercise, so that then all monitors are going to send their research findings to the commission, to the headquarters, research department, for the commission to study and then make a SWOT analysis of the whole situation and come up with a plan to, as it were, solve problems that are going are likely to occur during the actual registration exercise that is going to commence from the 24th to the 5th of May, 24th March to the 5th of May.
But what are some of the challenges you encountered during this period?
I cannot give you a comprehensive report because there were 20 centers, and then definitely the reports are going to come in for analysis. So I can tell you a few that were encountered, like...
Yes, go ahead with a few that you encountered.
Some of the applicants who went there to register could not really give their house numbers and that kind of stuff. And these are things that you need to fill in the certain portion, but to fill in the form, so that it creates some kind of delay. And of course, it has some effects on the whole process. It delayed the whole process. I'm not talking for every area, because, for instance, in the Western region where I went, the queue at the Safari Polytechnic was moving fast. It was normal, like a normal registration. Elsewhere, I heard there were a few delays. So these are some of the things that came out.
Were there enough sensitization for the people?
Let me say that this was a pilot project, and yes, of course, the awareness was created. You could see people in the queue, definitely indicating that there was some kind of awareness. But if you talk about the actual registration that is going to commence on the 24th, we're going to do a vigorous publicity campaign. We're going to target our stakeholders, the political parties, the electorate, and everybody that has the right to know about the exercise, so that come the 24th, we all know what we are supposed to do when we go to the registration center to register.
Some of those who registered said the process was too slow. So how do you address such a situation?
Some said the process was slow, but we need to find out what created that kind of situation. We cannot just say that the process was slow and then make a generalization, some kind of generalization as of the whole situation. Maybe at one or two places the process was slow. Why? We need to find out. And that was the essence of the pilot project. So I think that for now it is premature to give a proper analysis of the situation, or a comprehensive analysis of the whole situation. Let us wait for a few days, and then of course we'll come out, and then we'll know what to do come 24th of March.
At what point shall we be using the biometric verification kit?
Verification is not registration related. Verification is election related. Now we are talking about biometric registration, and I think that let's limit our focus to one, and later on we'll talk about verification. And the commission has indicated that it has factored it into the budget, the budget of the Electoral Commission, and therefore we hope to do it. But for now, let's talk about biometric registration and its associated problems.
Now, we've been experiencing power failures recently. So what provision has the EC made to address possible power failure during registration?
Thank you very much. The Electoral Commission has always been proactive. For instance, for the registration, the commission will provide generators, portable generators, for every polling station for the biometric registration. And that I think that is a good step towards that, making sure that we are not caught in the electricity, ECG, the kind of problem we are having regarding the power cuts and that kind of stuff.
So in actual effect, all these have been catered for in case of such emergencies.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for your time.
you're most welcome.
That was the Principal Public Relations Officer of the Electoral Commission, Sylvia Anno. This is Behind the News, and these are some of your text messages. Eric, University of Education, Winneba, how are those in various schools going to register for the biometric program? Colleague Gary Timpani, the PNC and CPP should join the NDC for a better Ghana. They cannot make any impact in the 2012 election. Alhaji Ibrahim, UCC, the earlier the PNC and CPP put aside the petty squabbles, the better for all of us Ghanaians are tired of the NDC and NPP. This is Behind the News. The country's parliamentarians will soon be on a coalition course with the former president of the National Association of Local Government Authorities of Ghana, NALAG, George Sey Bafo. Mr. Bafo has described as an illegality the allocation of the MP's common fund. So what is the exact action Mr. Sey Bafo intends to take? We have been trying to get Mr. Sey Bafo online, but his phones are off. But let's now talk to a local government consultant with specialization in public finance management, Komla Deku, to seek his views on what he makes of the issues raised. Good evening, sir, and thanks for your time. Hello, Mr. Deku. Hello, Mr. Deku. It appears Mr. Deku is not online yet. Mr. Deku has just joined us on the line. Thanks for your time, Mr. Deku. And we are talking about Mr. George Sey Bafo, who says the MP's common fund is an illegality. So what does the law on the District Assembly's common fund say?
All right. So very much. The Constitution under Section 252 is the one that actually creates the common fund. In fact, that is the one that has given birth to the District Assembly Common Fund Act 455. And in the Constitution, this money, which will be a certain percentage, in fact, in the Constitution is 5%, but this has been raised to 7.5%, is actually to come from taxes collected by central government, given to the common fund for distribution to district for development projects. It has not been mentioned any other participants. Said we have really seen that.
Hello? Hello, Mr. Deku. We are having some challenges with our lines tonight. This is Behind the News, and these are some of your text messages. The picture of Nylander and the others clad in PP colors captured in the Daily Graphic today clearly shows where the party's problem comes from, and that's from Alhaji Akwa. And the N1 highway is good, but it is human insensitive. As a resident along the highway, I can tell you if the concerns of the people are not taken, worse things are bound to happen. And that's from Reverend Bento Apenkwa. This is Behind the News. We will be back. Hello, Mr. Deku.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Deku.
Yes, I hear you.
Yes, please go ahead with your submission.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that the Constitution under Section 252, you know, is the one that actually creates the common fund, and that has led to the act at 455 for this Assembly Common Fund. That is where we have a certain percentage, which is 5% in the Constitution, but now has been revised to 7.5, to be ceded to Common Fund Administrator for distribution to the district for development projects. It doesn't actually mention any other participants in the Constitution. But of late, you've seen that a certain percentage is given to parliamentarians, certain percentage given to the middle level governor, that is a regional council, RCC, for the road that they have been paying, but they are all actually not in the Constitution. See, the issue even is, for me, not that just in the illegality. You find out that districts are really given a budget from the Common Fund Administrator that yes, we are going to give you this amount. On the basis of that, they start their procurement processes and then perhaps award a contract, knowing very well that this money will come, only to discover that a larger proportion of this money has been used at the center in procuring certain things without the consent of the district. That is even larger than the percentage that is even going to the MPs and then the regional administration. So in actual fact, it is very true. It is illegal because it is not there.
But this common fund that we are talking about, it is also meant for development projects. Why then is it illegal?
Well, it is illegal because in actual fact, why should MP be given that common fund? Why wouldn't the government create another fund for them? You see, government can create another fund for them and that can be used for development projects. That would have been okay. But if it, we are saying that we are going to assess the district assembly on the basis of 7.5% of the fund that is ceded to them, and eventually we discover that a certain proportion is to others, then on the basis of the, your assessment will be skewed because others are also taking it. It's true that they are also using for development projects. But why that district assembly common fund and not, you know, a fund exclusively established for MPs? That is the issue now.
All right, let's hold it here and talk to the Deputy Majority Chief Whip, George Kuntu Blankson. Good evening, sir. So is there any illegality concerning MPs and their common fund?
Well, if I heard a gentleman who spoke rightly, he's indicating that the amount given to the MPs for the constituency development is illegal. But forgotten that that amount also is for servicing the development of their localities. So what is the legality about? But if you say it in a form that according to the constitution, then what he's saying holds water. But if you think about development, then that money also is meant for development. So if portion is given to the MPs for their constituency or their locality development, there's nothing wrong with it. Because you should trace the genesis of how this methodology or this application came about. I learned in the initial leaders who were in parliament, during J.H. Mensah's first time, they brought this, development, in that public perceives MPs as developers. So if an MP do not, create any structure within his interest, is considered as a useless MP. So in view of that, our predecessors saw the need to come out with this structure in order to augment the strength of the MPs within the operations area. So once the thing is used in development, any problem with it, provided it's used for the purpose and intent it's meant for. And you should remember that this is an amount that is given to the MPs. Does not go to the MP straight. It comes to the assembly stream, where if MP needs anything to be done in the constituency, he has to seek the mandate of the chief executive, based on the exigency and the needed of the community. So I don't see any disparity insofar as this system is concerned. But if we talk about the constitutionality, then that one he has a case to make. But he cannot say rule out that it's illegal.
What exactly do the MPs use the common fund for?
My dear, if you go to my constituency, for example, you could see that I've utilized this the common fund to the best knowledge of my ability. We use it as intervention, social intervention. At times, even we use this part of the common fund to pay school fees, to give education to our citizenry. And at the same time, we use some also when maybe a school roofing sheet is ripped off. You will not wait for the BC to come. When you go there, we just come to MP. This structure is having a defect. Can you provide us with 50 bags of cement? Then we will use that money to do it. And there are so many other interventions that we use that money for.
All right, hold it, and let's go back to Mr. Deku. Mr. Deku, the Deputy Majority Chief Whip says they use the common fund for development projects, so he doesn't see any illegality with it.
Well, as he himself has clearly stated, it is
instance, but we are not looking at the utilization as well. Upper utilization, fine, they are using it for development. That is okay. But the means by which that fund is actually, you know, obtained, that it borders on illegality, because it is nowhere stated that the MPs should take part of that particular fund, and that it would even be better if a different fund is even set aside for MPs, so that they can be used, you know, the way they are using it. And it's very true. If you look at the Act, the Constitution, it is written for development projects, and development can be defined in various ways, as even really mentioned. But the issue has always been the pressure on them from the constituents in terms of payment or school fees, this and that and whatnot, when we all know that that's not the role of the MP. And so certainly they will have to really, you know, get some funds to support. Others are using it for some good things, no doubt about that. But we want it to be legal. We want it to be constitutional. We want this thing. I mean, that is precisely what we are really saying. The utilization fund, the control measures they mentioned, yes, they must be there to ensure that at least others do not even use that one to go and print and books and, this, you know, and do other things that is not wanted. But the controls, you know, must be in place. The only thing is that perhaps, you know, we expect that should have been a separate fund established for them so that they can use that one the way they want to use it to develop their area.
Are you saying that MPs shouldn't help some of their members who are in need of school fees?
In Niger, that is not the role of an MP. It is not. That is not the role of an MP, but it has come to light that, well, sometimes you have a lot of them, I've seen many of them, people queuing up, you know, I want money to go to hospital, I want money to pay school fees, this and that and whatnot. That is not their role. So if we have to really have that one out, we want, it's better for them to have a separate fund for all these things, so that at least to be able to undertake some of these activities.
Let's go back to Mr. Kuntu Blanks. The complaint is the source of the fund and not its use.
Well, like I said earlier on, that if it comes to the constitution, then I'll side with it. Support an intent of using the money. I mean, there's nothing wrong. That's why I stated it clearly. And you see, I will just allay the fear of Mr. Adiku, and I will tell him that because of all these issues that the government now decided that is coming out with this constitution, what you call the Constituency Development Fund. So when that one is in place, it will just offset this assertion of MPs being given part of the common fund. So you should, I mean, hold on for a while. And let's see
your
what will come.
Is out of service.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
It's out of service.
Uh-huh. So, if you hold on for a while, and whatever an agenda is coming with. And I think when that comes into, I mean, the mainstream, that will also, I mean, not allow the MPs to take any common fund. That will be replaced by what you call Constituency Development Fund.
All right, thanks for your time. That was the Deputy Majority Chief Whip, George Kuntu Blanks. And now joining us also on the line, we don't have the Minority Chief Whip on the line yet. And these are some of your text messages. PPP stands a greater chance of winning the election in 2012, and that's from Abuaje. Gaddafi Zebina, Weyome or no Weyome, we Ghanaians shall vote massively for Professor Mills. Andrew Mangaboko, if the N1 highway is a death trap, then speed ramps should be constructed to deter careless drivers from overspeeding. And Dixon Laura, did I hear the president bought Kinky at 50 pesos at the market today? I believe the size isn't as it was in 2008. This is Behind the News. Joining us also on the line is the Minority Chief Whip, Frederick Oparianza, to share his thoughts on the MP's Common Fund. Many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Why should MPs who are elected to make laws be given such funds for developmental projects?
Well, I think if you take the issue out of context, it might sound a little wrong. But if you, first of all, put the whole concept into context that we are a developing nation, and for that matter, the whole process of national development in itself is a dynamic process. The constitution stipulates that a minimum of 5% of the consolidated fund shall be put into a fund called the this assembly's common fund and distributed by a formula to be approved by parliament to all districts in the country. Don't forget that members of parliament are actually members of the district assemblies in their within which their respective constituencies are for. Now, if you look at the way the MP's share of the district assembly's common fund is administered, it would then give you a meaning of what actually happened. It is not as if this fund is given to the MP and it's in his pocket and he decides to dole it out the way he wants. Not at all. This fund is under the full control of the district assembly, headed by the district chief executive. What happens is that a little amount of the fund is set aside, and the MP is allowed to have a discretion of determining what the fund is used for, and it is done so within the scope of the assembly's own development plan. And so it is still within the plan that the assembly has for its developmental effort. The only difference here is the realization that the member of parliament who goes out and reaches out deep into the constituency may come upon such incidents that require immediate attention, and he can use this token amount to make an initial effort. For instance, there's a rainstorm in Suhum constituency. Whilst I'm waiting for NADMO to come and salvage the situation, if I have some fund in my district assembly's common fund, it shouldn't be too difficult for me to immediately get some items that are needed by the people to help them overcome their immediate impairment before the larger society comes to their aid. It could be a school building that's been ripped, the roof is being ripped off. It could be a little bridge that is broken and cutting off a section of the community and needs immediate repairs. It is for these little things. Somebody's child may have thrown out of school because the whole family cannot sustain living. Obviously, step in and help resolve this so that the child can do that.
Mr. Parianza, the complaint here is the source of the fund and not its use.
I understand, and that is why I traced it to the fact that you should understand that the member of parliament is also a member of the district assembly, and whatever the fund is being applied to is already within the scope of the assembly's own developmental plan. So it is not something outside of that scope, and so it is being used exactly for the same purpose. Now, if you talk about the source, the source of the whole this assembly's common fund is from the consolidated fund, and its purpose is to use the development of the district. And so you cannot look at the source and link it from the purpose for which the constitution decided that it must be set aside. The constitution never said that that fund must be for the sole or will be at the sole discretion of a district chief executive or district coordinating director or anybody. Now, the bigger question of whether it is an MP's responsibility to be and a deliverer of development projects is the real gamut of the whole matter. But the issue I was raising was whether, as a nation, we are yet at a point where we can actually disconnect members of parliament from the development within their constituency and they become solely development agents instead of becoming deliverers of development as well. The broad expectation of our people as at now is what we have to respond to. Some countries, have, as you are probably aware, have gone ahead not only constituency development fund, which is directly under the purview of the member of parliament, sometimes through a committee or through an administrator, to determine what those funds are to be used for the developmental purposes within the constituency. It is my view that, yes, we've operated this for a while. I'm sure by now we've had all kinds of challenges and we found shortcomings with it. I don't think that at the heart of it, one can say that we are going contrary to the constitutional provision.
All right. But thanks for your time.
Hello.
Hello. Many thanks for joining us. Your point is well made.
Thank
that was the Minority Chief Whip Frederick Oparian. And now back to you, Mr. Deku. Whether it is the MP's Common Fund or District Assembly's Common Fund, it is meant to improve the lot of the people. So what really is the problem?
Well, the problem is, as I've really mentioned, in fact, the deserve of they are charged with that particular responsibility. And to be able to do that, is to come out with, of later, what we refer to as the Medium-Term Development Plan, out of which they prepare the annual action plan. Now, the very moment the Common Fund is actually set aside, the Common Fund Administrator really gives guidelines to the various districts in terms of how that Common Fund must be utilized. They are all for the development purposes. Now, the MP is a member of the District Assembly. That does not mean that if you are a member of the District Assembly, you should be given a fund to be managed. As he himself has already said, once we have the system, the district administration system there, and they are, disbursing that fund according to the Financial Administration Regulation, the Financial Administration Act, and they are audited regularly, that should be enough. We are not saying that, MPs should not actually take part in the developmental agenda of the district. They should. In fact, that is why they are even members of the assembly anyway. Whatever they would want to debate and whatnot can be debated on that particular floor. Now, what some of us are suggesting is that they must have a dedicated fund for their activities. Now, the issue is that the source, as we keep on mentioning, is from the Constitution. And the Constitution does not mention that the fund should be appropriated among X, Y, and Z. It says it should be set aside and then this should be used by the District Assembly for development purposes. So if for some other need or the other, they might need to really factor, MPs into it, then we believe that a separate fund might be established for that particular purpose and not the, common fund. Yes, there are a lot of challenges with the common fund, we all agree, but one of the challenges is as a result of, giving them a budget and eventually don't release the money to them. And you take a bigger proportion, you share this and that and whatnot, they are work contracts, they are not able to pay mobilization or they are even not able to really pay for the contract. And therefore, all those projects will be hanging.
Thank you, Mr.
So if anything at all, they should have their own dedicated fund for all those things and not to burden the Disassembly Common Fund.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Deku. That was a local government consultant with specialization in public finance management, Komla Deku. Now to some of your text messages. Sly Accra, our MPs will always defend anything in their favor and disagree with one another when it bothers on developmental issues. And John Seke, Volta Region, MPs are just misusing the common fund. They do not use the fund for its intended purpose. And that's where we draw the curtains on tonight's edition of Behind the News. My production team was headed by Kingsley Obintre, Christopher Esiedu, Phyllis Kofi Bryce Agama, and John Poby. Technical production was by Joseph Darko, and Jonathan Thompson was the summarizer. My name is Agatha Samar, and thanks for staying tuned.